Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we have been discussing how the Supreme Lord and his body are not material products. They're not the product of any activity, or not the result of any activity. The fourth kind of result of activity is called samskara, or translated as refinement. The other three were generation. What is it? Which? Acquisition. Generation, acquisition, transformation, refinement, and then fifth would be destruction, or what? What's the fifth? No, this is enhancement. The fifth is? Yeah, and then giving up. Okay. Well, okay. Now we read 57.8. Samskaro pi kim atishaya danena malapakaranena va tatra ati. Okay, there is also a change of refinement. That's a kind of change, which is done either by adding an improvement or by removing contamination. Atishaya, something better, adanena, by adding that. Mala, dirt, contamination. Apakaranena, by removing that. One or the other. Tatra, atishaya danam, purnatvena, nirakritam. Of these two kinds of refinement, the adding of an improvement is denied by the fact of his being complete. He's complete to this extent that you can't even make him any better. Malapakaranam varyati niranjano nirmalo vishuddhagat namurtir ityartaha. The removal of contamination, the second kind of refinement, is refuted by the word the Brahma speaks, untainted, niranjana, which means completely pure. There's no contamination to remove. In other words, his personal form is composed of perfectly pure consciousness, which was discussed way back in the Anuccheda 20-something, that the Lord's body is Vishuddhasattva, pure goodness, which is conscious. Sri Brahma, Sri Bhagavantam. The verse under discussion, Bhagavatam 10:14-23, was spoken by Sri Brahma to the personality of Godhead. Okay, what does that statement indicate? The very beginning. No, what does it tell us? That, I'm sorry, is it here? Yeah, it indicates that we've reached the end of the Anuccheda. That is typical. At the end of each Anuccheda, he just makes a short sentence that this verse was spoken by so-and-so, and maybe spoken by him to so-and-so. Short commentary. Ghee is butter, purified by further cooking to remove the solids in it. Which kind of refinement is that? Okay. Yeah. The manufacture of ghee is thus a refinement by removing contamination. Flavoring the ghee with a spice is refinement by adding an improvement. Nothing, however, can improve the Supreme, and there are no flaws in him to remove. Everyone else is in need of the two kinds of refinement. Even the pure devotees of the Lord, who are constantly working to further perfect their love for him. So human beings need samskara. They need to be refined. Just like the recipe for fancy rice is not just boil the rice, but do something fancy with it. Refine it. Garnish. Human beings have to be garnished. Therefore, this terminology samskara is there in the Vedas. In the Manusmriti, Manu Samhita, in the beginning, it's stated, Janmana jayate shudraha samskaredhi bhavidvijaha. Everybody's born a shudra, but by samskaras, a person becomes a Brahman. So a successful human being, what is being of a perfect human being, becomes so by samskara, by improvement. Everybody needs some improvement. Even the materialists have to go to school to learn manners and learn their subjects to improve their intelligence and improve their behavior and their attitude and to remove the contaminations. Devotees also. It's not that we're exempt from samskaras. But we have different samskaras. We don't have to do all the rituals, all the Vedic rituals. But we have our samskara of Harinam, our samskara of devotional service, of Guru Seva. These are our samskaras that will make us refined and remove whatever contamination is left. Okay, any questions? But the Supreme Lord doesn't need any samskaras. He doesn't need any refinement.
Hari. Hare Krishna. Yes. What is different between Dvija, Vipra and Brahmana?
Okay, that's sort of irrelevant to the class. We have to, in general, try to stay on the topic. So, otherwise, you know, it'll turn into a general discussion and we'll lose track. But anyway, Prabhupada discusses, a vipra is a learned Brahman, someone who knows scriptures. A vipra can be understood in a more general sense. It's anybody who has the upanayanam, and that should include the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, they're also Dvijas. But in the scriptures, even in the Manu Smriti, very often Dvija means particularly Brahman. It can mean the other twice-born classes, but it's usually used synonymously with Brahmana. But Vipra is a learned Brahmana. Okay? Anything else? Yes, sir.
Question is that although we consider that Krishna he is free from all contamination, he's already complete, so yes. We don't have to add anything, to remove anything from him. But at the same time, according to the mood of devotees, he can become like more beautiful or more completely manifested or less completely manifested. For example, on the eyes of gopis or some very exalted devotees, he is very, very beautiful. And for materialistic people, they cannot even understand his beauty. So, and is it some kind of refinement or some influence?
But you see, upadhi is something separate from the thing that has the upadhi. Upadhi is a quality that doesn't really belong to something. It's just borrowed or imagined. Krishna doesn't have such qualities. His qualities are all within his sarupa. They belong to his inner self, all his qualities. So refinement, technically speaking, is a process of adding something that wasn't there before. That you don't have in Krishna. You have improvement, but it's not samskara, because it's just manifestation of what's already in him. But samskara is adding something from without or taking something out. Okay? All right. We will move into the new Anuchet. It's in file 18. Let's see how long this one is. It's three paragraphs long. 58. Tadevam purvam tad aishwaryadinam swarupa bhuta tvam swarupa bhuta tvam saditam. So previously, it was proven that the Supreme Lord's controlling power and other assets, his six bhagas, aishwaryasya, and so on, that they belong to his essential self, his swarupa. That's already been discussed. That was in text 23 through 27 of the Sandarbha. Tat cha te sham swarup antaranga dharma twat yuktam. This is appropriate. It's appropriate that all of his assets belong to his inner self. They're not something acquired. Person may be born poor, and he may gain wealth. A person is born in ignorance. Everyone's born in ignorance, but a person can get an education. But everything that Krishna acquires, he doesn't acquire, he has them eternally within himself. This is suitable. This is appropriate because there are qualities found within his essential self. Yata jyotir antaranga dharmanam tadiya shukladi gunanam jyotir bhutatvam eva na tama adi rupatvam tadvat. This is appropriate. Okay. These are all qualities found in his essential self, just as the innate qualities of light, like its whiteness, belong to the light and not to darkness. If something doesn't belong to you, then it belongs to somebody else. If I'm lacking money, that means somebody else has the money. I don't have it. If there's a poor man, then there must be a rich man who has money. So if quality of, say, the jyotir, light, doesn't really belong to it, it belongs to something else. In the universe of illumination, you have either light or darkness. if the qualities don't really belong to light, then maybe they belong to darkness. The light is white color. But you may say that real light has no color. It has no qualities like the absolute truth. You know, light is an abstraction. Real light doesn't have any color. Then does it mean that color white or other color belongs to the darkness? No, it doesn't. The innate qualities of light, like its whiteness, belong to the light, not to the darkness. The darkness is black. The light is white or yellow. That is Swarupa Bhuta quality. Quality that belongs to the very self of light. In the same way, the Supreme Lord, all of his qualities eternally are connected with his inner self. Okay, now the commentary. Text 23 through 27 of this Sandarbha established that the six special assets of God's personality, his power to control, his strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and detachment, all partake perfectly of his eternal spiritual nature. These transcendental assets belong to his inner self, in contrast to the external qualities of separate inert matter. Nothing exists that has no connection to him, but some things, his personal qualities and entourage, are identical with him, and others, the permutations of matter that entangle uncooperative souls, exist in apparent separation, out of coordination with his pleasure pastimes. Okay, why do we distinguish between what belongs to Krishna and what doesn't belong directly to him? Because doesn't everything belong to Krishna? Isn't everything his energy? So why are we talking specifically about some special kind of energy called Swarupa Bhuta energy, innate energy? Does he have energies that don't belong to him? Not really. Everything belongs to him. But there's different kinds of belonging. Some things are practically identical with him. The quality of his body, of his personality, the quality of the devotees who surround him, and the world he lives in, these are non-different from him. They are Satchidananda, perfectly transcendental. And he also has other energies, the material energies, which are not separate from him, but are not, we can't say that they're identical with him. They're of a different nature. Asat, Achit, Anananda. Here it says, out of coordination with his pleasure pastimes. Let me get to the end of this. Where is the contrast? Why is the material energy miserable and ignorant? Because it's out of coordination with his pleasure pastimes. It's not participating appropriately in Krishna's enjoyment. It doesn't serve his enjoyment, the material energy. Therefore, it's miserable and ignorant. Anything or anyone that serves Krishna's pleasure will be transcendental by definition and will enjoy all the benefits of being transcendental. So let me just read these last two sentences. These relationships can be compared to those of radiant light with its proper qualities, although the comparison is incomplete. Jiva Goswami is making a comparison to light as its so-called innate qualities. But they're not eternal qualities, like the qualities of the personality of Godhead, like the qualities of the absolute truth. Light is just an energy. It also dissolves at the end of creation back into the atoms, and the atoms dissolve back into the Mahatattva. The light is actually not permanent. So because the thing is not permanent, its qualities cannot be eternal. But the Supreme Lord is eternal, and his qualities are all eternally connected directly with him. Last sentence, something, namely darkness, can be found outside the scope of light. But nothing exists altogether separate from the Supreme. Light is not infinite in its scope. Light has its limit, and beyond the light is the darkness. The Supreme Lord extends without any limit. There is nothing completely outside him. That's the limitation of this analogy of comparing the Lord to something like light. Something like light, but not completely the same. Light is limited. Now, okay. Comment? Question?
It's mentioned that the gradation of energies you mentioned.
Yes.
But at the same time, we hear Prabhupada says, also yesterday we discussed, from the conditioned living entities point of view, there is material and spiritual distinction of energies. But from Krishna's point of view, for him, there is no spiritual material. Everything belongs to him. And number two is prapanchakataya buddhya hari sambandha vastunaha.
I'm sorry?
Prapanchakataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha. Yesterday we quoted. So use any material becomes spiritual. So how?
Well, okay, but you've been serving devotional service for so many years. I've been trying to do some service for 35 years. I'm still sitting in a material body with material consciousness. So the thing you offer by Yukta Vairagya becomes spiritualized, but it doesn't. The material body doesn't become spiritual. Material mind doesn't become spiritual. It can be spiritualized. Example given, like putting the iron rod in the blacksmith's fire. It becomes red hot, but it's still iron. It's not fire. The quality is not the possessor of the quality. There is still a distinction. Okay, did I get all the questions?
So when Prabhupada says that Krishna's point of view, there is no difference.
Well, okay.
And what does that mean?
Prabhupada said that once, and I keep on, devotees keep on coming back at me with this. You know, the Prabhupada said this, but it's only one. It only said it once. It's not a central point of our philosophy. It's a peculiar way of looking at things. That from Krishna's point of view, there is no difference between spirit and matter. Anyway, we're not Krishna. We can't see from his point of view. We can say that, but we can't really share that point of view. We're living entities. For us, everything's relative. Krishna's relative. Krishna has meaning in relationship to ourselves, even though he has his existence separate from us. But what does that mean to us? All we can know is Krishna's relationship with us and other living entities. So, okay, theoretically, and Prabhupada made the statement, from Krishna's point of view, there's no difference between spirit and matter. But it's not a point of view that we can use practically for ourselves. We have to see everything with the distinctions. We need to see the distinctions. Yeah. And if Krishna didn't somehow see some sort of distinction, then how would he have relationships? If it's just him and nobody else, well, who is this person talking to himself and having pleasure pastimes with himself? He has to think. He has to also see from a point of view of distinctions in order to enjoy his pastimes. He's not just playing with himself. You could say he is in an absolute sense, but the variety is there to facilitate the enjoyment. The distinctions are there for that purpose. Yes, sir.
There's a question in the same line.
Mayavada will say that the absolute truth is playing with itself. But that's Mayavada. Yes?
Like in this verse, Vishnu Sakti Para Prakta Kshatrangyati Adhapara Avidya Karma Samkinya Tritya Shakti Rishyate, that the definition of Maya is that it appears in ignorance and fruitive activity. So it seems that the distinction between material and spiritual energy, from our point of view, it must be somewhere in the mind when we see somebody. It's something which is for our enjoyment.
Yes.
It's material, and when we see these things for Krishna's pleasure.
If it's for Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But what actually is for Krishna's pleasure is for Krishna to decide. You know, we can make the mistake, some people do, thinking that we can transform matter into spirit, so we can stay material. We can maintain all our bad habits and attitudes and just force them on Krishna. Here's my garbage, Krishna, you please enjoy it. Here's all my filth, it's for you to enjoy. Some people try to do that. They try to be, they pretend to be devotees, and they just dump on Krishna all their filth. So we have to discriminate. We can't just think all the Maya is going to turn into something that Krishna likes. You know, he didn't like my Maya before, but now that I'm his devotee, he has to like my Maya. Mm-hmm. No, we have to give up the Maya. Give up the stuff that's dirty. And give Krishna something pure. We have to discriminate like that. Not just think all the dirt will turn into something nice because we're Krishna's devotees.
Mm-hmm. So, and also in this verse, Ritir Dhamma had prachitana prachita chatmana, this chitur shloki, that whatever we see without connection with Krishna is my illusory potency, Maya.
Right.
So, in the same way, connection with Krishna must be according to what he likes.
Like it won't be in connection with Krishna. We can throw it at Krishna, but he won't accept it.
Yeah, so.
It's up to Krishna's accepting it.
Mm-hmm. And we can adjust, we can understand what he likes from the Shastras.
Yeah.
And from...
Well, from Shastra, from Guru, from Sadhu, mm-hmm. and from experiment. I'm not sure what Krishna wants. Let me offer him this. If he accepts it, okay. If he doesn't, I'll try something else.
Yeah, thinking
about then you have to have a way to tell whether Krishna accepted it.
In the same way, Srila Prabhupada he gave an example of drunkard who is drinking wine and thinking about Krishna.
Well, he recommended that for the drunkard. For the drunkard, it's a step forward to think that there's Krishna. For someone who's supposed to be practicing devotional service, it's not a step forward to do the same thing. It's a degradation. Hare Krishna, thank you. All right. Anything else here? Yes, Madam Mahaprabhu.
In the translation, when Jiva Goswami uses the word yatha in the original Sanskrit, and you translate it as appropriate.
No, I didn't really. I think tadvat is the word.
Oh, tatcha.
At the end.
Tatcha is appropriate.
Which?
Excuse me?
The last word in the sentence, tadvat.
Oh, tadvat.
That's not either. No, I'm sorry. It belongs to the previous sentence, yuktam.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean, sorry. That's what I was thinking about, yuktam.
Yeah, this is appropriate because that I broke the sentences up differently in the Sanskrit. I have a comma and then the beginning of the next sentence. This is appropriate, yuktam.
Okay. I'm not questioning the translation. Okay, question is about why Jiva Goswami is using that word, yuktam. What is appropriate? Because I don't follow the logic here. First he chose...
We proved something logical, but what we proved is appropriate. It's not just we made some theoretical argument and came up with some absurdity, but the conclusion of our logic fits the facts. You know, that corroborates, that supports our logic. We logically, theoretically made so many arguments that Krishna's opulences and everything belong to his inner self. Now he's saying, okay, we proved it using logic and quoting from Shastras. And there's a good reason why it's suitable, why it's appropriate that we came to that conclusion. That conclusion is a reasonable conclusion.
So this refers to the conclusion. So maybe because otherwise this is may sound confusing. What is it? The very fact that we have proven that the Supreme Lord's controlling power belongs to his essential self. Yeah. That is appropriate that we have proven it, or if the conclusion is appropriate, because it just becomes confusing.
Yes, I get it. Okay, I'm making a note right now that we have to clarify what this is. What is it that's appropriate? Okay, hold on a second. Review your comment. No, I put it in the wrong place. Sorry.
Or maybe
hold a second.
If appropriate, it means, is it in this particular context, does it mean like consistent or something like that?
No, I don't think so. Okay, I think it means, you know, it's
compatible with the conclusion of the Shastra.
Compatible? No.
No, I'm not offering synonyms.
Compatible with other things that we already know.
Right.
It's consistent with knowledge that we already have.
I see. Just to clarify the idea behind this word appropriate for me, so I'm just asking.
Have to clarify what this is that is appropriate. Okay? I made a note to that. It's appropriate that all these qualities belong to his essential self. Because of the... No, wait a minute. No, then we get
circle of reasoning, yes.
Yeah, because the qualities found within his... Okay, I'll just have to puzzle over this then. Well, sort of, yeah, okay.
Can I ask a question?
It says, because they are Sarupa Antaranga Dharma, because they're features of his inner Sarupa, therefore they belong to his Sarupa, but that doesn't say much. Okay, I'll pause. I'll have to study it further. Sorry. You have another question?
A good question is... Is about your commentary that there are two sets of qualities, some qualities which are innate to Krishna and some which are distinct from him. I just wonder, because there are in different schools there are different approaches. Some of them interpret different qualities, like external features of Krishna, as his like Vishishta Advaita does, as something like his external body. Whereas somebody like Madhvacharya interpret them as completely, entirely separate, only almost to the point of being non-existent. Existent, but very, in very vague way.
Well...
My question is...
Okay, it's not... The separateness is not that radical. Everything is still... In Madhva's philosophy, everything is created by and maintained by the Lord. Everything has a direct relationship with Him. But relationship between separate entities. Okay, any question?
My question is how... is it a dynamic relation between the thing and whether that thing is Krishna's internal or external feature? And if it is so, then who draws the line? Is it drawn...
What do you mean by dynamic?
For instance... We
changes?
Know that, for instance, matter, for instance, is matter. It's separate. But when we offer an apple on the altar, it becomes what Christians say, the transmutation of thing that it takes on a separate a spiritual nature, entirely becomes spiritual.
Well,
spiritualized.
Spiritualized is different. It like gets a coating of spirit. The matter is still there, but some spirit attaches itself to it. Mm-hmm. There's a spiritual quality to the prasadam, although it's the same chemicals, same biochemicals that are on the plate are still there. Nothing has changed physically or chemically, but something spiritual has descended upon it. And when we eat what's on the plate, we get the spiritual part too.
So it's just.
But it's not literally matter being transformed into spirit, some equals MC squares kind of thing.
Because I've read statements by Srila Prabhupada where he says very clearly that matter turns back into spirit when it's engaged in devotional service.
Right, but this is what we mean.
Uh-huh.
The material world hasn't disappeared. My material body, after all this time, is still here. My stupid material mind is still here. And it will be until I get liberation.
So that statement in the third canto of Bhagavatam where Kapila Deva says that just like food gets digested by the stomach, the same way the subtle body gets digested by the process of devotional service, that's not exactly...
It does get... But that's liberation.
But
That's Srupa, Mukti. When the subtle body is not destroyed until the point of final liberation. But it's being gradually worn down.
So in other words, somebody who has attained prema, for instance, he doesn't have any subtle body anymore, does he?
Well, subtle body is shrinking. Your ego, which is the major component of the subtle body, is getting weaker and getting smaller. Hopefully, the practicing devotee, his big fat ego is getting smaller and weaker. That's like the degeneration, gradual degeneration, or getting old and decrepit of the subtle body. Mm-hmm. But it's still around. It doesn't go out of existence. It doesn't die until you get final liberation.
I hope you don't take my question as it's completely unrelated, because what I want to clarify for myself is whether there's a kind of a flux of between these two qualities, sets of qualities of Krishna, the internal qualities and external, whether he is in a position to decide what he enjoys as his internal quality or if it's fixed forever.
No, I don't think so. When a soul attains liberation, it's not that the stock of, it doesn't break the laws of thermodynamics. The stock of matter in the world is not diminished by someone's liberation. All the elements go back into their stockpile. Then, we read that about the person getting liberation. This element went back to where it came from, and that element went back into. So it's not changing the matter, it's just sending the matter back where it came from and awakening the spirit. It's not a transformation of matter into spirit in the literal sense.
So such cases as, for instance, liberation of like the dog which went back to the spiritual world in the same body, or Pandavas who also went in their same bodies back to the spiritual world, these are exceptional cases, or they have to be reinterpreted in terms of...
You think you have two kinds of bodies, you have three. You have a spiritual body, it's there. That's you, it's not different than you. If you're there, then your spiritual body's there, because it is you. You can exist separately from your material body, you can be a ghost, but you can't exist separately from your spiritual body. No way, because you are your spiritual body and the self are identical. So you have three bodies. So going back to God in the same body really means that the spiritual body manifests, and the material and subtle go back to where they came from. No? You're not going to go back in your material body to the spiritual world.
That's why
you have a spiritual body. It's not that the matter has to be turned into spirit. The spirit is already there.
That's why I'm asking this question, these are proofs that matter does turn into spirit, because essentially it's the same.
Your material body doesn't turn into a spiritual body. Your spiritual body that's hidden by the material body awakens and shows itself. Narada Muni, Prarabdha karma nirvano nyapatat pancha dayika. The moment of his, his final liberation. His karma was completely used up. Prarabdha karma nirvano. He had no more prarabdha karma. Nyapatat pancha bhautika. What's said is that his material body fell, it died. It doesn't say that it became spiritual. That's the difference between a devotee's perfection and Krishna's acting as if he was doing the same thing. The devotee goes back to Godhead, his material body is left behind. Something has to be done with it. If you don't bury it, you burn it. If you don't, one or the other. Where the Supreme Lord goes, he doesn't really have a material body to leave behind. He can fake one, but he doesn't have a material body. When he comes and when he goes. But we do. And the body, the matter and the spirit, as far as I can see, are different.
So when Srila Prabhupada makes repeated statements about that for the Supreme Lord, the difference between spiritual and material energy does not exist.
Well, how many times does he say that? How often does he say that?
Lots of times. He gives an example about electrician and who can convert
into
another.
Which example?
He gives an example of an electrician who can convert electricity into cold and heat. And then he also makes the same thing, I think, in the third canto of Bhagavatam, when the departure of Vidura is described from the palace of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, and he says that the same energy works as internal and external in the same case. So I just, that's why I want to clarify whether, again, it's a fixed, like, more towards Madhva, Madhva stance, that it's completely separate and completely distinguished from spirit, or we lean towards more of a Vishishta Advaita, that it's kind of almost like spirit, but not quite yet. Or is it the flux between them?
I don't think we have a flux. You know, Jiva Goswami doesn't discuss such a flux. You know, the dynamics of spirit turning into matter turning into spirit. You know, this is a lot, three times bigger than the Tattvasandarbha. But the Bhagavatamsrita is three times bigger than this. And the whole Bhagavatamsrita talks about the perfection of the living entity. And then the Pratisandarbha talks about how he becomes perfect. And the Pratisandarbha talks about what it means to be perfect. In both of those big books, I don't think there's a discussion of changing, you know, refrigerators into heaters and vice versa, or changing matter into spirit. I don't think Jiva Goswami discusses that. Yes. I'm, you know, dealing with this because it's a tough question. Everyone's upset about it, so I'm not avoiding the question. I'm spending time on it, on this question of does matter actually turn into spirit? Yes, yeah. Well, but also it's on everybody's mind, or some devotee's minds.
I don't know. Yes. Maybe last question on this topic.
Please.
Like, so when we are worshipping the deities who are spiritual, and when you worship the spiritual masters, pure devotees, so how we call that a spiritual body, is matter transformed to spirit? Like, because is that seeing the matter which is used in Krishna's service as spirit is as a way of respect, which is better than the other material elements?
Well, if you call me on the telephone and you put the thing on your ear and you hear me talking inside the telephone, you don't think I'm inside the telephone, do you? You know, you hear the little voice inside the headphone. That doesn't mean I'm inside the telephone. I don't have to be. You know, for proper use of a telephone, you don't need to resort to such a delusion to think I'm actually inside the machine. No, it's a means of communication. So the deity is Krishna literally. Okay, because, you know, Krishna's form is always spiritual. But it doesn't mean the spiritual master's form is always spiritual. He has a material body. And when you have your picture of him, it's a way of communicating with him. By making the offering to the picture doesn't get nourishment from it. But the picture doesn't get nourishment when you offer your prasadam bhoga to your guru, you cook lunch for him and offer it to the picture. The picture doesn't literally get fed. And the guru doesn't get fed. I heard one story of lady disciple, the guru was in the next room and she didn't know it. And she was making offering to the picture, and she did, you know, the guru didn't get anything to eat. He was hungry. Yeah, in the next room. It doesn't work that way, you know. But it's a means of communicating. You can contact the spiritual entity. The spiritual master is a spiritual entity. But he is distinct from his body because he's a jiva soul living in the material world. So you can offer it to the real spiritual master, the spiritual entity, by offering to the picture as a means of communication. Just like you can talk to me on your mobile phone, but that doesn't put me inside your phone.
So how it differentiates with the deity then?
Deity is different because that's the Supreme Lord who doesn't have a separate body. That's spirit. The deity is spirit. It looks like metal to us, but that's our limited vision. No. The metal didn't become spirit. The spirit just happens to be in the same place as that metal. You know, the metal smiths made a deity, but Krishna was there already. They just happened to pour some metal in the same place. No, no. I'm sorry. It's not that Krishna is inside the deity. He says, let me out of here. You know, it's a genie in the bottle. Well, no. If we had eyes to see, we would see that he's there. But Krishna gives us something to see because we don't have the eyes to see him as he is. Just like you're walking at night on a dark road. So you, or on your bicycle, you put this reflector. So when the cars can't see you in the dark, there's something showing some light. A piece of plastic at the back of your bike or a light bulb. Like that, Krishna wears something so we can see him in the dark. He's wearing the metal statue so because we don't, because we're blind and we don't see him in the dark. So he wears something on top, you know, on him just to let us see. But that's the material part of the deity. It's just a sign. It's called pratima, a symbol. But it's not that it's a symbol of Krishna. It's Krishna, and he's carrying a material symbol to get our attention so we can see him.
If the Goswamis are to be here now, the Sad Goswamis are to be here now, and they are Jiva Tattva, so will you ever distinguish their body as material from their...
Yes, we have to if they're Jivas. You know, Jiva Goswami is here with us now while we're discussing his... But his body is, you know, in the Samadhi. It's in a different place.
So when you say this body is transcendental, the spiritual master's body, that
better
means...
To be exact, better to say spiritualized.
Okay.
He is transcendental.
Okay.
But his body is not exactly him.
Okay.
He's come into this world and accepted a material body to do his service for Krishna.
Okay.
He also may have a car or a bicycle. That doesn't make the car or the bicycle identical with him.
Okay.
And he's got another vehicle, this body.
Okay, thank you.
So Krishna doesn't need a vehicle. He can fly around without a vehicle. His self-same body. But a living entity coming into this world, even on the mission of the Lord, has to take a material vehicle. Yes,
Krishna.
Okay, this is a question session.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's also related. So we have few examples of conditioned souls in material body who were able to visit Vaikuntha, like Durvasa Muni or some four Kumaras, or in this also this journey of Gop Kumara. So what happens with their body? It seems like they...
You mean when Durvasa went to Vaikuntha, you mean like that?
Yeah, Durvasa Muni, in his material body, he because it's technically it's impossible to come there in material body.
That's very rare. He's an incarnation of Lord Shiva, so actually his body is spiritual. You might give the example of four Kumaras, who were almost perfect, but they weren't inhabitants of Vaikuntha. They're residents of the higher planets in the material world. How did they just walk into Vaikuntha in their material bodies, not taking their boots off? How did they get in? I'm not sure. Okay. Okay, so matter can't enter. Now, here's an exception that when Goloka manifests on the earth, then the material energy can mix with it. You know, the trains all go through Mathura, you know, the main trunk line from Delhi to Agra goes right through Vrajabhumi, all, you know, cross section of it. And all the materialists on the train, even those who never even heard of Vrindavan, they pass through the holy dham. So the material energy and the materialists and the demons and the gross materialists can all enter the holy dham on the earth. That's a special quality of you know, Boma Vrindavan.
But what about Gopa Kumara, his journey?
Gopakumar?
Gopakumar, because he elevated from the earth
as he progressed from one level to another within the material world and then went into the spiritual world, his body had to change at every step. The appearance didn't change. He was always dressed the same, but the physical composition of his body had to modify to enter these different realms, even in the material world.
So it was like a gradual change, like according to his spiritual level of elevation.
What do you mean by gradual?
I mean that while being in the earth, he has one body, and then when he went to higher place, he gave up this body.
Yeah, just suppose even if he's going to go into the ionosphere, you know, above, you know, 100 kilometers off above the surface of the earth, you're going to have to either change your body, have a different body. You can't live, you can't breathe the air and tolerate the radiation in your current body, even 100 kilometers above the earth. Either you wear a space suit or you have to have a different body. So what does it mean going to different planets? To go to different planets, you have to have a different body or some special protective apparatus. And we don't read about Gopakumar being given a space suit. Mm-hmm. His body modified so he could live in different environments. And when he went to Vaikunth, he went there with his spiritual body.
And all this was done by internal energy.
By?
All those changes.
There's a dressing room where the changes go on. That's the Viraja River. Uh-huh. You take a dip in the Viraja River. If you're going in, you get a material body. If you're going out, you give up the material body. It's a cloakroom. Uh-huh. Yeah. You pick up a material body on the way in the material world, and when you leave, you're supposed to give it back in the Viraja River. Yes. We actually have to stop. This is the last question. We're over time.
I heard about Dhruva Maharaj. He has gone with his body to Vaikuntha Loka after he leave his body.
Yes. Well, I'm just presuming that means that his spiritual body manifested without seeming to die. You know, but still, it's, you know, he just didn't go through the show of dying. He didn't drop dead on the ground. But there must be a similar transformation. You can't take the matter into the spiritual world. Yeah. It stays in the material world. He didn't undergo the whole drama of dying, but actually the material elements left him, and he went in his spiritual body. It's just without dying. He stepped on the head of death. You know, he didn't have to succumb to death. But I'm sure he didn't bring the material elements with him to the spiritual world. He left them behind. We leave them behind by dying. But he did it without dying.
Means
he gave up his material body, but he didn't die.
And spiritual body can also, like a material body, if it be transferred.
Transfer?
Like means its spiritual body can be like material body.
Well, same as posed to me over and over again, that you can turn spirit into matter, matter into spirit. Okay. But I don't see that the Bhagavatamrita and the Sandarbhas, you know, changing it back and forth. It's like it looks like it's changing back and forth. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. And what did Prabhupada say?
Prabhupada says, quoting the Acharyas, it's possible. I'm just trying to look up the commentaries of the Acharyas, and it looks like they're kind of admitting to the possibility, saying that the word he here is used in the sense of it's definitely true, and you shouldn't have any doubt about it. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but anyway, it's not a...
Okay, but does that mean they were walking around Vaikuntha with material bodies? Okay, I don't know. Yes.
Because he
maybe I made a proposal. Maybe it's not solid enough. No, let's... My tentative proposal is that there's no visible change of body, but invisibly it changes. That means you give up your material body, but there's no visible sign of it. You know, it just happens, you know, by some invisible process. All the material atoms get pushed away and your spiritual body manifests. Otherwise, you're going into the spiritual world with your material body. The other proposal is it changes. The matter becomes spirit.
Patently speculative, but when such parikaras as upon the Pandavas manifest here in this material world, their spiritual bodies may be replicated or reproduced by their material forms, exactly the same forms. So when they go back, that's nothing changes, but the material body kind of merges into their spiritual body, or just assumes the same shape. That's why the visible change is not there anymore.
Maybe. We'll have to continue this. Okay, it's not finally settled. All right, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.